Good afternoon. May it please the Court. My name is Dean Campbell. I represent Rosemae Herman, the appellant, in this matter. Would the Court care for a brief recitation of the facts?
Well, I would think we understand the facts from reading the briefs, but if you think there's some salient facts that we need to know or be reminded to articulate your position, go forward.
Thank you. If there's no specific questions, I'll just move forward. The case involves, obviously, a set of ordinances that were passed by the Town of Ocean View involving water. And this case is about the deprivation of a property right without a rational justification. Let's be clear, it is not about the installation of a water system. It is not about the taxation or the assessments that are associated with that water system. This case is solely about the town's position that the private wells need to be disconnected from the residents, and that is the case. For that reason,
you were talking about what the case isn't about. There's one other isn't about question, and that is you're not challenging the procedure by which this ordinance was adopted, were you?
To the extent that we've alleged equitable estoppel and vested rights, I believe that we are. The problem with this case has to do with the way the information was passed on to the residents, the way
the public was deceived, but there was no technical, there's no positive rule that was violated. You're just saying that because, in your view, or your client's view, certain information, that is, the public wasn't adequately told that they would be required to disconnect their wells and hook up to the sewer system, as distinguished from just paying their fair share. That was that deprived them of a vested right and also deprived them of a constitutional right.
That's correct, Your Honor. We're not claiming that there are any technical defects with the procedure, with the way the town moved this forward. The claims are simply based on constitutional error, violation of the constitutional rights and the vested rights doctrine, as well as the estoppel.
And what one fact to get clear in my mind is we're talking about an ordinance that prevents property owners from connecting their private wells to their household, which will now be serviced by the municipal water system, correct? We're not talking about them not having to close their wells, can't be used for any purpose. They can use the water to water their lawn or a trough for their horses to drink from or whatever, but they just can't hook it up to their household water use, correct?
That's correct, Your Honor. The town did come back after the initial ordinance was passed and pass another provision to that particular law that did allow for the use of private wells for outdoor purposes, washing cars, irrigations, and so forth. It just could not be connected. My client's problem and objection to the way this was handled is that she has lived in this house for a number of years, has been connected to private water, had a state permit to be connected to private water, had every right to use that private water, and is now being told that she cannot use it for personal consumption or human consumption, that it has to be limited in some way. And the town has moved forward in this case with the, we believe it's pretext, that the ordinance was passed for purposes of safe drinking water. And it was that comes with the police powers, and based on the Stern case, that the town has absolute right to do that. The problem is that when we look at the record, that is not the case. In the documents, the minutes, the presentation that was given to the town before they went forward with these public hearings, there's no mention of any public safety issues present. The closest I think that would come to a public safety issue would be that it allows fire hydrants to be in place. And that's fine. And even if we take the 2009 budget report, which was, of course was written after the ordinances were in place, the town sets forth its goals and what the goals of this water system were.
Well, this is where I'm having a problem understanding your position. Let's assume, and I realize you disagree with the assumption that the public was told, you know, verbally and whatever writing and notice was published of the facts here. That is, that they would be required to hook up to the municipal water system for purposes of using drinking water, and they would have to disconnect the well from the household and could use the private well water only for other purposes. Let's assume they understood that and still voted for it. Would we be here today?
Probably not.
Okay.
One of the problems with this case is that the facts you've just cited are not the case.
I understand.
That they were misled.
But I mean, it's at least legally possible that you could be arguing that the city has no power to do that, you know, even if they flat out tell the voters, the citizens, what they plan to do and they get a majority approval.
I believe that that set of circumstances would negate the promise, the estoppel argument, the vested rights argument, perhaps. But with respect to the constitutional argument, I don't believe that it does. With the constitutional argument, to take away a property right, the government has to have, even using the minimum test, the rational basis test, the government has to have a rational connection between their goals and what the ordinance is doing. If we look at the goals that were set forth by the town, both in the meetings as they were explained and in the budget report that came after the fact, all of those goals can be satisfied without forcing the residents to connect to, to disconnect from the private waterways.
I know, but what I'm trying to disentangle here is the thread of your argument that runs along the lines that the citizens were misled or deceived because they weren't told what exactly was going to happen. And the rest of the argument, which is that a property right was taken away from them, and it's that which is the unconstitutional act, even if they knew that that would happen. To say it differently, are you making both arguments, or is the deception part of the argument critical to your position?
The deception is not critical to the argument of constitutionality of the ordinance. The corollary would be that if the town council had completely misled the residents and passes an ordinance, even though there's misleading going on, that ordinance still has to pass the constitutional test of overbreath and vagueness to be constitutional. Just because whether the information provided is correct or not, there's still a constitutional argument about whether or not there is a rational basis between the...
Well, you're talking about a number of different concepts. Void for vagueness is one concept. You know, the unconstitutional taking is a different one. You know, where are we here?
Understood, Your Honor. Where we are here are arguments of overbreath and vagueness, both facially and as applied. We have not challenged based on a taking. That was not one of the arguments. My client understands that the taking has to involve a full taking and not a partial taking. So that is not one of the challenges. But the constitutional arguments are simply the vagueness arguments and the overbreath.
Well, with regard to a rational connection between the goals of having a central water system, which costs $3.8 million, was that the final cost?
I believe that's correct.
Okay. And the mandatory connection or mandatory disconnect, isn't there a rational connection that if people can voluntarily choose not to be users of this system, that you cannot afford it?
No, Your Honor, there is a disconnect there.
Was that a pun?
I'm sorry?
Was that a pun? There's a disconnect there?
Sorry, not intended to be. Now, with respect to the way the ordinance is written, it's essentially three parts. There is, you have to connect, you have to pay, and you have to disconnect.
But your pay is just for the connection.
Your pay is just for the connection, yes.
And so they support the debt service through selling the water.
That's not my understanding, no. The facts of this case are that the water is provided by Tidewater Utilities, who then bills for the water, and essentially Tidewater, I don't think this fact has been flushed out completely, no pun intended again. But my understanding is that the water usage does not pay the debt service. The payment for the installation comes from the fees, the assessments, the frontage fees, and payment over time through the assessments in a taxing scenario, and that's how the system is paid for, not the use of the water.
But there is a 40-year term for the loan, correct?
I believe that's correct, yes. I think my opponent would be more capable of answering that than myself. I know it's a long term, yes. Okay. One of the salient facts of this case and is that there has never been, and there's no record whatsoever in the records of Ocean View or with the Department of Health about any water testing ever being done. And we consider this significant because the argument used and the primary case relied on by Vice Chancellor Laster was the Stern case out of the Third Circuit. And the Third Circuit, the Stern case, essentially says the municipality has under its police powers of general welfare for the community the power to implement a water system. But as you read Stern, it's also clear in the Stern decision that the rationale for the implementation of the water system had to do with clean water, had to do with purity.
Yeah, you're into the rational basis part of your argument?
Yes, I believe.
Okay, the court, the vice chancellor held that the city, the town, could well have determined that under the well system, which had been in effect for decades, there was a risk to the public that the water could be contaminated, and that to eliminate that risk, the city was going to create a municipal water system to which everybody would have to hook up. Why doesn't that suffice? An appropriate analysis under the rational basis test, which is basically the most deferential constitutional standard of review.
Yes, understood that the rational basis test is the most difficult for a client in my position to challenge constitutionality. But nonetheless, there still has to be some rational basis. And the town can certainly say we're doing this for these reasons and so forth. The problem is that's just not what the record shows. And it's our position now that the safe water, the quality of water, is an argument and pretext, that there was really no concern about the water level or the quality of water even considered by the town. It's not in the minutes.
Well, let me interrupt you. What is your contention was the real reason? If the quality of the water was a pretext, there had to be some other reason, right?
I would assume so, yes.
And what is that?
Development, Your Honor. And quite frankly, this is speculation, but looking at the facts as they started in this case, we have roughly...
Well, wait a minute. Why is it speculation? There either is a record of their reasons, or there's no record of any reason, or there's a record that they wanted to, for fire prevention, have the town able to have functioning water hydrants to put out fires. Where are we?
From what we can tell from the record thus far, only part of the town was being served by a centralized water system. All of those water systems were either privatized outside of the town or through another town. So this water system only affected a part of the town. The records produced by the town, in our opinion, state what the goals were. And none of those goals were related with the quality of water. They were...
But were any of them rational for any reason? What's irrational about wanting a water system that allows you to have functioning fire hydrants to fight fires in case a portion or a single dwelling, for that matter, in the town caught fire?
There's nothing irrational about that, Your Honor. But what is irrational, though, is why does that affect my client's right to be connected to her well? The fire system can function, has no bearing whether my client's connected to the well or not. The money can be collected to pay for the debt service of this system, whether my client disconnects or not.
Excuse me, if I'm understanding you, you're saying that there was a rational basis to set up this system. There, you even include some statements about the hydrants and provide a permanent source of safe drinking water and so forth. So you may not be satisfied that that was really what their reasons were, but there is a record that gives a rational basis for what they did, right?
For two-thirds of what they did.
Okay, well, wait a second. If I understand you, you're saying, okay, it was acceptable, it was legal, if you will, for them to set up this municipal water system. But there was no reason why they had to tell everybody you must hook up and that you can't use your wells anymore.
That's correct.
And you're saying that because that wasn't necessary, it was not permissible?
That's correct.
And on what basis do you hang that one?
On the basis of overbreath, Your Honor.
But wait a second. You're saying that when the town passes an ordinance that under its police powers it has the power to pass, it then has to make that ordinance as limited as it can possibly be?
That's correct, and that's exactly what the overbreath doctrine stands for, is that a part of a law can be passed, can be valid, can be constitutional, but if it oversweeps and takes away constitutional rights, here we have property rights, unnecessarily, then that is the classic definition of overbreath. And that is what the argument is here, is that this law, and my client doesn't challenge the rational basis for establishing the water system, doesn't challenge that the town has the ability to tax and assess to pay for that debt, but cannot find any rational basis as to why it's necessary for her to disconnect from her private well.
Well, okay. Two questions. Number one, aren't you, sneaking into the rational basis analysis, what is recognized as actually an enhanced scrutiny or a stricter scrutiny analysis, which may require some tailoring or proportionality. Number one, that is, you're asking the rational basis analysis to take two 20-pound buckets of water and carry them uphill when that's not part of the analysis. Secondly, even if you're right, as the Chief Justice pointed out, and I think the first question you were asked, there has been tailoring here, hasn't there? That is, there is a restriction on the property owners that had wells that no longer allows them to use their wells for drinking water and personal consumption. But for any other purpose, those wells can be used. They just have to be disconnected from the house. Why isn't that a sufficient tailoring and proportionality?
Because even under that scenario, my client is having a part of her legal rights package taken away.
Yes.
For no reason.
Well, that's what's in dispute. As Justice Berger pointed out, the reason is that there is a police power concern, that is a police power purpose, which the town is lawfully entitled to implement, namely to ensure that there's potable drinking water and also a sufficient water supply to put out fires. Why isn't that enough?
No problem with that police power at all. and that the town does have those rights and has the right to implement that system. It's only when we get to the point that they're taking away rights from my client unnecessarily where we have the argument. And I would agree with you, the rational basis.
But the right that's being taken, you say, is being taken away unnecessarily is the right for your client to use her well and not the city town system. Correct?
That would be correct, yes.
But where does that come from? That is, the town has made the policy judgment that it is necessary. So, and you're saying it's not. How do we, on what basis did we override that judgment by the town?
But on what basis does the town make its decision? And that's kind of the central issue here, is that there doesn't appear to be any basis for the decision requiring the disconnection.
Okay, well, your position is if we were reviewing a trial judge's decision, we would be looking for findings of fact and some application of a doctrinal principle to those facts to reach a conclusion. Is what you're saying that the town never articulated the necessity of telling people who had private wells, you have to disconnect, but you nevertheless, if you didn't disconnect, you'd have to be assessed as if you were using the system. You'd have to pay a hookup fee as if you were using the system. But rather than make you do that, in order to ensure both the sufficiency of the water supply for safety purposes and to assure the potability of the water, we're telling you it's mandatory that you disconnect, because otherwise we have no control over the quality of the water in the system. Did they make any findings of fact to explain why they ordered the disconnect?
I'm not aware of any in the record, no. It just seemed to, in fact, the original ordinance as written only used the terms mandatory connection. It did not specifically say at that time that there would be a mandatory disconnect, only a mandatory connection. And then only later was that part added, allowing the water to be used for car washes and irrigation purposes.
Well, if there were a mandatory connection but no mandatory disconnect, wouldn't they be taking water into their system and everyone would be mixing the water of everyone's private well with the town's wells?
Not necessarily. A lot of that depends on how you define connection. And one of the things that we pointed out to Vice Chancellor Laster was that it could actually be connected without being used. And that was, looking back, perhaps a issue of fact that was not decided. And that's why part of the reason we're here today was because that summary judgment was issued against my client, even though there was that fact of can there be a dual connection still outstanding.
Let me see if I understand that. You're saying that the city could have gone on and hooked up every property owner that had a well to the system, but they wouldn't have had to open the shuttlecock. That is, they could have kept the water from flowing into the house, and the water from the well could continue to be used.
That could be another way to put it, yes.
Is there anything in the record that would support that type of system existing anywhere? I mean, this theoretical system where someone can draw water from their well and still be hooked up to the municipal water system, does that exist anywhere?
That is not in the record, no. That is one of the theories. I'm not sure why that would even be in the record.
Well, here's one reason it would be in the record. Money to fund this came from the feds, and the feds never do anything without employing a whole army of people to decide what the regulations ought to be to decide how federal money is to be spent. Isn't much of this driven by the federal requirement in order to acquire the funds to institute the system?
Yes, absolutely, and that is part of the argument as well, that the federal government's USDA required an ordinance to be put in place before it would provide funding.
It wouldn't provide funding if it allowed private wells to continue to service homes that would otherwise be connected, even at a dry connection, with the town system. You wouldn't get the federal money, would you?
That is not in the record. Matter of fact, one of the exhibits that was attached to the opening brief was the conditional approval from the USDA. And all it mentioned was an ordinance requiring mandatory connection and did not mention mandatory disconnection. Okay. I see that my time is up.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And may it please the Court, my name is Dennis Schrader. I'm here on behalf of the town of Ocean View, the appellee in this matter. I think if the Court will allow me, I'd like to go back and address two questions that were asked by Justice Ridgely that may be of some guidance to you, and then begin my presentation. The first was with reference to the contractual relationship between the town and Tidewater Utilities, Inc. The town bid out the bulk sale or bulk purchase of water to Tidewater Utilities. Tidewater holds the certificates of public convenience and necessity for much of the surrounding area, and so they became the bulk sale purchaser. They also were the successful bidders of the operations and maintenance contract. So that when Mr. Campbell refers to the fact that the water is billed by Tidewater and provided by Tidewater, it is a system that is owned and operated by the town of Ocean View but has been contracted out for services to Tidewater after the bidding process had taken place. There's been a lot of conversation or discussion or argument, as the case may be, about disconnection from the property, and I want to go back, and I think we've somewhere Mr. Campbell has lost why we're here. The water system here is not just because five council members decided they needed a centralized water system and it was a good idea. It was decided because it also promoted the health and safety of their community, and that's in many of the preambles to the ordinances that are adopted and the actions that took place. I think the Court has come to this conclusion, but I want to make sure that it's a part of the argument. In order for a mandatory connection system to work, there must necessarily be disconnection. Water systems are looped. They're under pressure. You turn a valve on here, the water moves from there. And if any one of the people who are connected to the system were to have connected private wells, then that would eliminate the benefit of having a centralized treated water system by contaminating it with the water from that source. In this case, there is no record that either Ms. Herman's well is permitted, although Mr. Campbell says it is, and I will take that as true, nor is there any reason to believe that the water that comes from that well, or is there anything in the record that indicates that that water is treated in any way to be sufficiently a part of a system regulated by the Delaware Department of Health. Two key factors to that disconnection issue. What we're looking at today is a legislative act performed by the town council of the town of Ocean View. It's a process that began in the year of 2000. It culminated in February of 2008 after many, many public meetings and hearings and discussions about all the ramifications of the water system. Those are all set out in Exhibit R in the appendix at A-133. It is a document that was appended to a budget. It was directed by the town council to be prepared because a chronology of events did not exist, but it was made a part of their budgetary process so that all the people in the council and then within the community would understand how the water system came to take place. Ms. Herman's arguments about vested rights and estoppel are of some curiosity to me because they would imply that she did something that she would have otherwise not have done because of the system. There is nothing that supports that in this record.
Mr. Schrader, can you speak up a little bit into the mic? Thank you.
Sure. Sorry, Your Honor. Ms. Herman actually knew on February 7th of 2007 by a letter from the mayor of the community, and this is a part of the record of the earlier proceeding, that she would have a responsibility to connect and disconnect to the system. So she knew at least 1 year before the system was completed that this was to be her burden. After the system was completed, there was a grace period of 1 year and about another 60 days after that because of notice provisions.
Okay, so you're saying, number one, as a factual matter, everyone was told what the rules of the game would be.
That is correct.
And is that fact in the record?
It is.
In what form?
It is in the form of the Exhibit R, the Appendix 133, which describes all of the various items that were discussed, dates upon which they were discussed, and when and where they took place, where all of it is there, including the letter to, I believe Ms. Herman is in the record, although I don't recall the page number of where in the appendix it is.
Was that before or after the non-binding referendum?
This was after the non-binding referendum. The non-binding referendum took place in 2003, and it was a referendum that was determined by the members of the town council to be a method by which to see whether or not there was public support for the proposal, to make a decision as to whether or not it was economically feasible to go forward with the system. They needed to gauge the public on whether or not a $4 million system should or should not be built.
Okay, so your response to the factual argument that the public was misled or deceived as to what was going to happen is not so.
That is correct.
There's another factual argument, if I can put it that way, and it goes to the core, I guess, of the rational basis analysis, and that is that the rational basis, if there was a rational basis, that the town council had in approving this ordinance, and you know, with the mandatory hookup and mandatory de-hooking up of the wells, that was never articulated in the form of any findings.
Not in the classic sense that one would get from a court making a decision. It was a part of the legislative debate that took place over the course of 8 years, and in fact there are a number of references to the fact, and it's been alluded to this afternoon, that the United States Department of Agriculture would compel mandatory connection and disconnection as a part of it. There's also a reference in the briefing that I submitted on behalf of the town to the fact that the state well permitting laws also address this particular topic about whether or not...
I'm not sure whether you're telling us that the rational basis here was articulated or it wasn't.
It was not. No one sat down and specifically said these are the findings of fact that we use to base our decision on. However, during the course of all of those many years, the issues raised by Mr. Campbell and being raised by the court today were discussed and debated publicly throughout the process.
Okay.
At the end of the trail, the town council of the town of Ocean View concluded that it was in the best interest of the people of the town in that unserved area to have a centralized water distribution system, that it was in their best interest for their health and their safety, and agreed to borrow the money to do so. In doing so, they became committed to mandatory connect disconnect. There is, if I understand correctly, the arguments that were made by Mr. Campbell and in his brief, in his reply brief, I believe that the only issue left before the court on the issue of this is the issue of disconnection. We're looking at a legislative act. The Vice Chancellor Laster made a decision based upon two things. He recites to an earlier Brown case that he decided, which is not of record. He also recites to the Stern-Halligan's case, which is the Third Circuit case. In doing so, we are left with whether or not disconnection is something that can be done as a part of the police powers of the town of Ocean View. In that regard, Mr. Campbell, I believe, tries to articulate that there is a loss of a property right. He also argues that there is a estoppel and that there is a vested right to maintain that well. The Stern case describes often and early the police powers when it comes to health and safety when a municipality determines that it's in the best interest of its citizens to have a water system. In my research and preparation for this argument today, I went into the Westlaw yesterday and found that there were 158 references to Stern versus Halligan in the United States legal literature, all of whom either accept or discuss the Stern-Halligan cases that applies to the various municipalities, but none reverse it. It remains the bedrock of American law as it relates to water. There was a distinction drawn by Mr. Campbell in his briefing as to the difference between water and sewer. I'm sure Justice Ridgely remembers the Rehoboth Mall case that we argued many years ago in front of you when Rehoboth Mall sought to get out of the West Rehoboth sanitary sewer system. Justice Risley at that time was called upon to decide whether or not the police power would require the disconnection of a private sewer system. The police power that was articulated in the county statute is similar to that which is articulated in the municipal laws. The court at that time upheld the mandatory disconnection. The cases that are the progeny of Stern-Halligan talk about water and sewer, and many of those cases often say that there is no real distinction to be drawn between water and sewer as a mandatory connection. Mr. Campbell, in his reply brief, makes reference to the fact that as a vested right, the ability to draw water from the ground is different than having a septic system, articulating that with a septic system you are placing something in the ground, and as such it may cause some deleterious problem for the other people within the community, but that when you draw water out, you have done nothing wrong. And I point out to you that the flaw in that argument is that what has been put into the ground may also be drawn out of the ground, and as a result of that, that is why we have water treatment. The cases that are the progeny of Stern-Halligan often discuss the fact that there is some disparity between sewer and water, but in the end, the disparity between the one and the other is not significant enough to allow for the disconnection or the mandatory connection laws to be avoided, whereas they are with sewers. Many of those cases that come from Stern-Halligan, and including Stern-Halligan, refer to potentially hazardous sources as a legitimate basis because there may be some unknown but justifiable harm. Had we known, or do we know, that the water from Ms. Herman's wells are treated or clean or permitted, because we don't seem to know that other than Mr. Campbell's statement, perhaps it would give us a different view. But ultimately, it is a potential harm to the centralized water system because of those issues. And as a part of that, and because it is a health and safety issue, disconnection is the appropriate remedy in this matter. In the matter of estoppel, again, I'm not sure where we're going with estoppel. Estoppel requires that there be a good faith reliance by Ms. Herman upon some act or omission of the town, that there has been some change of position on her part that has required her to expend some form of money or to take some action that she would otherwise not. And as a result of that, the inequities of the situation would permit her to continue the course of action she has chosen for herself, or would state a claim against the town, barring it from a requiring mandatory disconnection. As to the three of the first, let me back that up, of those four items, I'm not sure that there's any good faith reliance, because there is, she has done nothing other than complain and got a letter back from the mayor articulating his response about connection or disconnection. But she did nothing to change her position. She incurred no expense. And obviously she did not rely upon the decision of the town, because she contests it mightily. And as far as any inequity is concerned, she has incurred no new expense as it relates to the placement of the well or the continuation of her private system. I would make the argument that if there is an inequity involved, that the benefit to the community outweighs any private right that she has to that well. Mr. Campbell, in his briefing, argues in the Artesian water case against the County of Newcastle that then Vice Chancellor Hartnett had articulated that there is a vested right to the water, but then Vice Chancellor Hartnett also went on to argue that that is a limited right and described how that was a limitation that applied to Artesian. It is a different set of circumstances, but in both cases, whether it's this one or the Artesian case, we are talking about a limitation on the ability of a person or a company to withdraw water from the ground.
Well, the vested right estoppel concept, at least in this area, and you know, generally involves cases where developers, encouraged by the town or the county authorities, to come in and make an investment in a development. The developer expends a substantial amount of money, to explore that and to create an infrastructure, and then before anything else happens, for political reasons, the town changes its view and passes a zoning ordinance that makes it legally impossible for the developer to go forward. I don't think that's what we have here. But the argument that seems to be at the core of the plaintiff's position is that either even under rational basis review, this ordinance fails because it goes further than it needs to in order to accomplish the police power purpose. What is your response to that in constitutional conceptual terms?
Well, Your Honor, I think the answer to that is that if one accepts that the predicate of this legislative body was that it was either going to have a central water system for the health and safety of its inhabitants, or in the alternative, as has been suggested, that this was something compelled upon the town by reason of its financing. In any event, when that legislative body made that decision, even though the only language we have is conclusory, not neatly found findings of fact which make lawyers and judges happy, we have a rational basis for the centralization of the water. If we accept the premise that it must be health and safety, which is always, I think, at the core of this, you cannot permit a system of connection by private well and central water system at the same time. And all of the progeny...
Is that fact supported in the record?
I think that if the record just demonstrates a lot of things, and in particular when I was rereading it yesterday, no offense to anyone intended, but it's somewhat like the Bible. There's a lot of things in there that are said that are contradictory because there was debate both for and against the system, for and against mandatory connection, for and against mandatory disconnection. There is a significant record in that regard. Is the court looking for something that was transcribed and a member of the council sat down and articulated reasons much in the same fashion as we would if this were a zoning case? We do not have that. We're here today because this court is challenged to determine whether or not the Court of Chancery has committed an error of law in rendering its decision. I obviously have a fond attachment to Stern versus Halligan, and I believe that Vice Chancellor Lasser did the correct thing by ordering the connection of Ms. Herman to this centralized water system. There's one last point I would like to make with the court that's perhaps a little bit on the anecdotal side and has nothing, it was not argued, but Vice Chancellor Lasser, in an earlier decision in the Brown case, I think in May of the same year as the original decision he refers to in his opinion, gave a letter opinion about police powers. I know that all of us in this room, particularly me as a municipal attorney or you all as members of the bench, often refer to police powers but never discuss how the history of police powers came about. There is an opinion by Vice Chancellor Lasser to that point that is of some interest and doesn't necessarily relate to this case, but it is significant and of some importance. I have nothing further to present to the case, to the court on this case, and we'll accept any further questions, or otherwise we'll stand down.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
You may find it unnecessary, but the clock says you have 5 seconds. I'll give you a chance to at least walk to the podium.
Justice Jacobs, I believe, is right on point. There are findings of fact that remain in the record. Whether or not this could be accomplished by some other means, I think still remains open for the court to find, and that is a finding of fact why the court should remand this to the court.
Thank you very much. Thank you, counsel. We'll take the case under advisement and recess.